gang. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. That is RBN. It has a website, republicbroadcasting.org. And this is listener-supported radio, but it is not National Public Radio. It is National Bugle Radio. Click on the donate button and send RBN some shekels. Today is Monday, and we have the leader of the British Goyim with us, Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. That's going to shock some people that you got my name correct for the first time in the history of the show.
You never told me what it was.
No, it was just because everyone started calling me it, and I tried to initially correct, but then the correction never went through, so it just became Mark Collett. So I was happy with that. It wasn't. It's just going to be
well, whatever you're happy with is fine with me. It took a while just to get the spelling right, frankly.
It did. Double L, double T. The people who I always find it highly frustrating. I don't mind pronunciation issues, but misspellings are far more irritating.
Well, Mark, you have another viral video. I want to congratulate you on that. It's only been out since Friday, and it's got over 70,000 views, right?
Yeah, it's doing really well. I moved my podcast to Friday because obviously with us having our show on the Wednesday night, I don't like to put too much content up too quick because I feel that, you know, some nationalist commentators, they produce lots of great work, but they can sort of bury a good post or a good video with another video very quickly. So I moved the podcast from the Thursday, which has always been at 1 p.m., to Friday at 1 p.m., to give it a good almost, you know, 36 hours between our show and the podcast. Now, the podcast and the show are both on my channel. But, yeah, I couldn't believe it. It had a great opening. It's had over 70,000 views in just over 3 days. So I'm pretty happy with that, and I hope it keeps going because it's a very important topic.
Well, we talked about it last week.
We certainly did. And for anyone who doesn't go to my YouTube, it's called The Plot to Flood Europe with 200 Million Africans. And as always, my videos are filled with facts, references, quotes. I like them to be something that you can show your family or your colleagues or your friends. And it isn't just a sort of a rant. It's not just my personal opinion on the matter, but it's facts, it's quotes, it's things that can be backed up, things that can be researched. You can follow a trail back to who said things and why they said them, because it's very important. We've talked about facts and emotion, and we do need to have emotional arguments, things that pull on the heartstrings, things that motivate people. But equally, everything we do needs to be differentiated from what the left does, what the liberals do, by being backed up with hard, solid facts and evidence, so that when we motivate our people with emotion, they know they're acting on a factual basis.
Mm-hmm. This is a really, really important subject. I've been following demographics for probably almost 50 years. I remember my father taking me to the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C., funded by a Briton, by the way, a Smithson, who never visited the United States, but apparently was illegitimate and thought the British were too snobby, and so he willed all his fortune to America for these museums. Anyway, so thank you guys for that. They're good museums. But there was an exhibit, and it was basically a rope hanging from the ceiling and forming a parabola. And it was depicting the Earth's population, which at the time was about 3 billion. It had just gone over 3 billion a few years earlier, I guess. Now it's 7.5 billion, closing in on 8 billion. Now, I've studied it in various classes and on my own, and I remember a college course on economics that was dealing with population, and one of the points it was making was, well, when countries get to a certain level of economic development, birth rates fall off. But before that, you know, the death rates fall first and then the birth rates. And we have seen that trend in lots and lots of countries. We saw it in European countries. We've seen it in East Asian countries. You're even seeing it in places like Southeast Asia, certainly in China, even in South America. You're not seeing it so much in the Muslim world, and you're certainly not seeing it in Africa. Now, the African death rate, yeah, has gone down, but the birth rate has remained high. And, of course, there's no prospect of them having economic development either. They just keep having babies and babies. And if you look at China, and we had this discussion yesterday, it really wasn't until China adopted the one-child policy that they were able to take off economically. So this is a dilemma that we're faced with because, the European mentality is that you can't let children die. You can't let children die anywhere in the world. Of course, there's other Europeans who have this mentality. You can't promote abortion. You can't promote birth control. Not that the Africans necessarily would use it that much. But so you've got this runaway population in Africa. That's where the bulk of the population growth over the rest of this century is due to come from. Massive population pressure, and you've already got them flooding over the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. What's to be done about it?
Well, this is very interesting because when I made my podcast last week, I tried to keep the podcasts generally around the 15-minute mark, and of late they've been straying slightly north of that, with the last few being just over 16 minutes, and some of the more sort of long and thought-out ones, such as the writing Europeans out of their own history, even going north of 17. Now, I have been known to make ones up to 30 minutes long, but I like to keep them concise because I feel that on YouTube, people like something, around 15 minutes. And once you start going a bit longer, you have an audience drop off. But there was a huge extra dimension to what I was writing about this demographic change, about this boom in the African population. And this was even admitted by the professor that I was quoting on African population change. He actually said that, well, he begrudgingly admitted that the African population growth was due almost entirely down to Western foreign aid. That Western foreign aid has created this nightmare scenario. Not that he thinks it's a nightmare scenario. In fact, he welcomes millions of Africans coming to Europe, and he actually coined the term Eurafrica, claiming that the most optimistic end for Europe would be for Europe to become a welcoming multicultural continent, which was inherently mixed race, that it was a mixed race land that he termed Eurafrica. But back to what I was saying, he did say that it was Western foreign aid that had created this problem. And you've got a problem with Africa, you see. You've historically had a very high infant mortality rate. And that high infant mortality rate has always been offset by these people having a huge number of children. So these people would have maybe 8 to 10 children. And of those 8 to 10 children, sort of maybe 5, if you were being optimistic, would survive. Somewhere between 2 and 5 would survive. And probably slightly less than that would make it to breeding age. And because of that, the African population remained largely stable. But the problem is, Western foreign aid has done everything in its power to ensure that every single African child has survived. So these people are having 8 to 10 children, and now, instead of sort of 2 to 5 surviving and less than that reaching adolescence, you've now got maybe 80% of the children living. So the population is rising. Now, the left will say, oh, but it's just a matter of education. It is just a matter of teaching these people to now have less children. But that's not the case, because you've always found in every society that those with the lowest IQs, those who are the least mentally able, have been the ones who've had the most children. Now, Africa is a continent where I think, I've got the figures, I can't remember exactly, it's something like 21 countries in Africa have an IQ of 70 or less. And that's phenomenal. That's phenomenally low. It's mind-boggling, really, that that many countries on that continent would have an IQ that incredibly low. And to compare that to Europeans, European nations have somewhere around the 100 mark, 98, 99, upwards of 100 in some cases. Italy has an average IQ of 102. So here you've got, and that's an average IQ now in a multicultural nation. So whites, as a group, those of European descent, Caucasians, have a slightly higher IQ. So you actually see there the sort of differential. So these people are going to keep having children, but their children are now going to survive, overwhelmingly survive. So you've got this population growth. But the problem is, as the population has grown, the lands these people live on haven't been able to sustain life. So what you've got is, let's say in Africa, an African nation, you've got 10 million people, and the land only supports 5 million people. So naturally, you would need a drop-off of 5 million people for those people to live in harmony with their environment. But along comes the West and ensures that all 10 million people live. So the land can't support that. So then you've got hunger, you've got famine, you've got disease, you've got pestilence, you've got all these problems. So the West comes along and says, well, we'll give you water, we'll give you food, we'll give you more medical care. So the population grows. So now you've got 20 million people living in a nation that can only support, naturally, 5 million people. So instead of having 5 million starving, as you did when the population was 10 million, you've now got 15 million starving. And the land that couldn't support 10 million has not a hope in hell of supporting 20. So now the land is not only incapable of supporting 20, as it was incapable of supporting 10 because it could only support 5, it is now completely ruined, destroyed, and it won't support any, because that many people has just ravaged the nation. So where are these people going to go? Well, the West is going to carry on feeding them. The West is carry on giving them medical care. And now the land hasn't got any hope of supporting that many people. They're going to migrate north to Europe, to the promised land, to the land of milk and honey, the land of plenty. And that's what they're doing. And they are flooding in. And these people, Emmanuel Macron, when I say these people, I don't mean idiots, I don't mean just people on the internet, I don't mean you and I mean people like Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, Jean-Claude Juncker, the president of the EU, have come out and said that between 150 and 200 million Africans will be reaching Europe over the next 30 years. But equally, they've said the African population is going to double, well, more than double, from 1.28 billion to over 2.6 billion in that 30-year period. Well, if Africa cannot support its current population of roughly 1.3 billion, what's it going to be like when it's got a population of 2.6? And I would say 200 million Africans migrating elsewhere would be a very, very conservative estimate. We could see double that number. And that is going to be a critical mass. That's going to be a swamping mass on a level the world has never seen before. And this is all down to Western aid. And this isn't just me saying this. This is, I believe his name was Professor Stephen Smith, who was actually the guy who came up with the figures, came up with the study that Emmanuel Macron is actually citing. And this is insane. And when we're talking about numbers of people, we're talking about famine, we're talking about IQ, you've also got the fact that of the top 20 countries in the world with the highest rate of HIV, 19 of those right. are in Africa. So you've also got contagious, debilitating,
yes, right.
life-threatening diseases coming with these communicable people as well.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, so you mentioned the IQ.
It's 25 African nations have an average IQ of 70 or less.
It actually goes beyond just the IQ. There's other traits the Africans have. I always forget whether it's high time preference or low time preference, but they have poor impulse control. They're less willing to postpone gratification. And then, of course, they have higher testosterone, higher sex hormones. This in the United States, it's well documented that they have sex more often and start having sex younger. If you look at, and of course, with all of those things mentioned above, they're less likely to use condoms or birth control when they do have sex. Communicable diseases, well, you talk about rates of AIDS or other sexually transmitted diseases, and adult black males have 8 times as high rates of, you know, most of these diseases as non-blacks. When you get down into the teenage years, like at 14-year-old, it's like a 40 to 50 times higher rate, because very few teenagers of 14-year-olds and, you know, whites or non-blacks are having sex, but it's not at all uncommon among the blacks, and they don't use any precaution. And these are, it's not just all related to low IQ. There are these, you know, African traits. You can go to, I'm not an expert on the Aborigines, but I was in Australia a few years ago, and I went to an Aborigine village, and the Aborigines are measured with an even lower IQ than blacks. They have a hard time learning how to read. Most of them don't learn how to read, not very well. The Aborigine languages, most of them or many of them didn't have a number system that went beyond 4 or 5. And I don't know of any had systems that went beyond 20. So yet they just don't seem to be reproducing the same way. They don't seem to have those same tendencies as the Africans do. I'm not an expert on it, but the Africans are a special case. And just getting back to the economic books that I was reading in the 1980s, the idea was that if, for instance, once the mortality rate, infant mortality rate goes down, the idea was, well, people won't need to have so many babies, because in undeveloped countries, your children are your pension policy. And if you have a high rate of infant mortality or low life expectancy, in order to guarantee you're going to have a kid who's going to take care of you, you have to have several, because they might not survive. Whereas once infant mortality is taken care of, you're fine having two, because and probably you're not looking at them as pension policies anyway. I'm not sure if Africans were ever really looking at their kids as pension policies. I don't know if that was ever really the case in Africa. Do you know much about that?
Well, I think obviously they have large numbers of children to make sure they replace themselves. And I do believe that they look on things. There are many different tribes across Africa, and I believe that family size is culturally important to them. And they aren't people that regularly use contraception. Contraception isn't something that's used within the African community, not in Africa and not in the West either. So I do think there is a large degree of culture there as well.
Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. after reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio, with Patrick Slattery and Mark Collett. And we are talking about the African population explosion. And of course, we don't wish any African ill will. We don't wish them ill will, but this is a massive problem that faces humanity. I was shocked by the population explosion 50 years ago when I understood what my father was telling me. But of course, a lot of those projections, the projections for population in China and Japan and Europe and America, they didn't come true. Things changed and our birth rates went down. And then even Latin America and probably India and some other places, Southeast Asia, have gone down a lot more than faster than expected, but not Africa. And
well, it's very important to note that there are still high levels of growth elsewhere in the world. The places where you see a drop off in growth, sadly, is amongst developed nations mm-hmm. that have a very, very high IQ and a high quality of life. And you are seeing that in places like Japan, Europe, US, Canada. In fact, I'm putting together this week's podcast, which is on the fact that whites in America are facing this existential threat. They've reported just this week that the white death rate now exceeds mm-hmm. the white birth rate in the majority of US states.
And actually in the country as a whole, too.
Yes, and I've started putting together a podcast on this and saying how in places like Japan, there isn't such a problem, because if the population starts to drop, that can be turned around in a homogenous and cohesive society. But the problem is, in the US, I've been looking into your immigration statistics today, and it really is shocking. I mean, the more I've been looking into this, the more shocked I've been. I mean, America has 42.4 million immigrants, illegal and illegal, and in the US, I mean, that's 2014 stats, but that's the highest number ever in American history. And amongst those, the Department for Homeland Security estimates 12.1 million of those immigrants are there illegally. Then you have a look at the birth rates of these immigrants. In some parts of many states on the southern border and the east and west coast, less than 20% of infants between newborn and 4 years old, less than 20% of them are white. Mm-hmm. And you are looking at this, and there's this unprecedented demographic change. Now, obviously, the Democrats are doing this. You know, they say the Democrats are doing it for votes and the Republicans are doing it for cheap labor. But it's more than that.
It sure is.
They're doing it, you know, and I love it when conservatives try to sort of oppose this, and they say they're doing it because they want the voters. They want to get rid of the Trump voters. They want to outnumber the Trump voters. Well, what are Trump voters? White people. It's just they want to outnumber white people. This isn't about stopping Trump getting in. This isn't about ensuring that the Trump voters are held in check. This is about ensuring that white people are never again a majority in the United States, and the United States as a cohesive society made up of those of European descent is smashed and wrecked upon the rocks. And if you think of the... Sorry, carry on.
If you don't mind me interjecting here, especially seeing as I'm in a country that still has a First Amendment, if you look at a lot of Jewish intellectual writing, you see, especially after World War II, a lot of writing saying that we will always be vulnerable to nationalist, ethnically based nationalist parties coming in and genociding us as long as they're capable of it. And the way to prevent that is by changing the demographics so that a ethnically based nationalist party, white European party, could not ever take control. And so they're importing a population.
Yes, of course. And really, that was what I was going to say, that this is about...
Okay.
This is really about getting rid of us in any sense. And I was going to liken it to something that... it's not my analogy. It's... George Lincoln Rockwell said this. He likened the ship of state, so to speak, as being like a real ship, and those that are forging the charts, those at the wheel, the chart forgers being the media, telling everyone where to go, telling the boat where to sail, and the ones at the helm being the politicians, are essentially driving us onto the rocks of demographic disaster, so that when America lies upon the rocks, the shipwreckers, who are the chart forgers and the politicians who have strewn us on these rocks, driven us onto these rocks, essentially get to benefit like the shipwreckers of old did from the plunder.
Well, we will be back after the break with more of this important discussion.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
I really love this bump of music, I tell you. You hear everything on National People Radio. Well, gosh, we've been talking about this most important topic that is taboo, and it's very hard to talk about. There was something that going into the first break, I just wanted to mention, and then we'll take it from there. You were talking about George Lincoln Rockwell. Should talk about that, but President Jacob Zuma, former President Jacob Zuma, who I guess until earlier this year was president of South Africa. He had a big scandal during his administration. He was accused of rape. Well, the courts decided it was consensual. Consensual with whom? Unprotected sex with a woman he knew was HIV positive. Now, here's, you know, the leader of the biggest economy in sub-Saharan Africa. You would assume that he'd probably be reasonably high IQ, and yet where's the impulse control? He has sex with a woman he knows is HIV positive. And I've seen this before on on the internet, and maybe white homosexuals can be like this too, but black men talking about having sex, unprotected sex with people they know are positive, and yet, you know, they don't protect themselves. You can respond to that, or you can move on to that George Lincoln Rockwell article, or any other direction you want to go in.
Well, there's not really much I can say to that. I mean, I think that there is a major difference between, say, as a generality, between those of European descent and, say, Africans, especially sub-Saharan Africans. And one of those things is being able to delay gratification. One of those things is being able to put off having what they want in the short term for gaining something better in the long term. And here you have a perfect example of this. Now, obviously, sex is something that everyone wants. And, you know, sex is fun. And if it wasn't fun, it would be quite disastrous because, obviously, nature has designed us, or, you know, God has designed us, whichever way you see the world, in such a way that we enjoy having sex. And that is so because we need to be tempted in to the act of copulation, because that means we carry on passing on.
Because otherwise, it would seem kind of weird.
if sex was disgusting or painful, people wouldn't do it. So populations would die off. And obviously, all creatures across the animal kingdom, except for a very small minority, actually do enjoy having sex. And obviously, if a woman presents herself to a male, the male will look at that and think, oh, short-term gratification. But if she was to say to the majority of men, especially high IQ males, well, I actually have HIV or AIDS, and that's a contagious, life-threatening, debilitating disease, those with a high IQ would say, well, there is the short-term gain of getting what I want, but there is also the long-term problem of dying of the infectious disease that I may well catch by having sexual relations with this woman. And that's a perfect example of delaying gratification, or saying completely foregoing instant gratification for long-term goals. In this term, the long-term goal is to live longer and have a healthy and fulfilling life. But here you have a man who is the president of a major nation, a major African nation, who's saying, well, I couldn't delay gratification. I have to take the short-term gratification despite the long-term sort of, what can we say, the long-term problems of that gratification being so grave. And that's a very worrying issue, because that man is a president. He isn't somebody who's much, much lower down the scale. He's the very top of his nation.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, this is such a, it's hard to emphasize. It's hard to overemphasize what a huge problem this is facing humanity, and yet it's taboo to talk about it. We're not supposed to think about it. We have some developments, though. You have the Italian, I guess he's the interior minister, who is turning away ships. Of course, they get turned away and wind up going to Spain. There was a lot of news going on in Europe over the past week about, you know, how to divvy up these migrants. Is Europe, I mean, maybe it's an obvious question, but is there really a lot of movement in Europe, a lot of political movement? Is Angela Merkel on her way out? Are there going to be more like Italian-style elections, more Viktor Orbáns? Is it going to be fast enough?
I don't know. I mean, this is a really difficult point to discuss, because when I was, obviously I don't want to ruin this week's podcast for everyone, but I was looking at articles written about the demographic problems in the States, and here's a quote from an article I read. You can shut the door to everyone in the world and that won't change, said Roberto Suro, an immigration and demography expert at the University of South California. The president can't do anything about that. If your primary concern is that the American population is becoming less white, it's already too late. Now, they're essentially crowing in this article that was published in the Washington Post that although Trump's actions, if he got his way, may well delay whites becoming a minority by 5 or 10 years, it won't stop it. There's no stopping it because too many have been let in and they are breeding at too rapid a rate. Mm-hmm. And my worry about Europe is, in some ways, I don't think Europe has gone as far as America, but it's certainly heading that way. And I certainly do believe that the problems that we face here in Europe will soon be very similar to those in America. You know, you've got this 200 million Africans heading to us over the next 30 years. But even if we created what they term Fortress Europe, there would still have to be some form of repatriation policy. Because as we know, and I posted this, it's quite good you've asked this question, actually, Patrick, because we don't script these shows beforehand. We tend to just ramble and discuss. So none of this is pre-scripted. But I did post this to Twitter earlier. And this is from the 20th September 2017. Mohammed is top English baby name for fifth year running. So there you have it. Mohammed is the top English baby name. So even if we stopped having any immigration, even if we stopped the floods coming in to England, we've still got a problem where Mohammed is the top baby name. And that just goes to show that the Muslim population is already having such a massive demographic impact, even at the numbers which are currently within the UK. Could we reverse things without some form of repatriation policy? And the answer is probably not. And that's why we need some way of either having a repatriation policy or, and this is always another issue that we can always talk about, if we don't have a repatriation policy, we do need to work alongside non-whites who have similar ethnic goals to us and allow them to form their own ethno-states, maybe within our borders, so that there is some form of separation for mutual benefit.
Well, or ethno-communities. In certain ways, I think the European situation, even though if you look at percentage of white versus non-white, it doesn't seem as severe as the United States. I think in some ways it may be worse than the United States because the immigrants to Europe are mostly Muslim, and there's no chance. I mean, they're very, very different. Immigrants to the United States are mostly Hispanic and are culturally not as different. In some cases, ethnically not different at all. You see sometimes these heads of Hispanic advocacy organizations, and they're completely European, but you know, they have a Spanish surname and have been, I guess, would you say brainwashed or gaslit or whatever into identifying with Hispanic interests, Jewish-defined Hispanic interests, if I may, against whites. It doesn't have to be like that. And a lot of the Hispanics in America are actually pretty white and could assimilate. And another difference between the United States and the European, various European countries, is the European ethno-states were more narrowly defined. And the United States was originally basically British Isles, not so much Ireland, but, you know, British Isles plus, it was tolerated, German and, you know, Northwest Europe, right? And the conception of white America has grown. You know, it grew to include Eastern and Southern Europe and Irish, which is pretty unquestionably white American now. And it could grow somewhat more to include people who, as whites, who aren't thought of or don't think of themselves as white now. There is that. There was something else I wanted to say, and it slipped my mind, so I'm just going to kick it back to you. I'll probably remember in a minute.
So where do you want me to go with this one, then?
What about, how we always script our shows, and we know exactly what we're going to do?
No, it's quite... I always find our shows very interesting, because we have sort of... we have managed to talk round in a circle without actually planning to do so. But I do think the issue with Hispanics is they are an interesting group. You obviously have a large problem with Hispanic migrants, but the whiter, more naturalized Hispanics, could they be welcomed? Are there ways of life? Because some of these are Christian. Are there ways of life?
Oh, they're all Christian.
Yeah, are there ways of life, though, compatible enough with ours to have some form of agreement with them, some form of concord where we could work alongside them? Because I've noticed in America, and again, I have to go to videos that I've done, things that I've researched. Another one of my videos that did phenomenally well, I think it's been seen by about 640,000 people now. It's called No Whites Allowed, Anti-White Policy Backfires. And it's about the Evergreen State Colleges, No Whites Allowed Day at school. Now, when I started researching them, I was looking at it from a black on white perspective, like the Black Lives Matter perspective. But that was actually the wrong way to look at it, because you look at these groups that are saying no whites allowed and saying it's only a what would have originally been a blacks only day on campus, but it's not. They're calling it a people of color only day. So it's almost as if those who are against whites, those who are anti-white, are actually creating this sort of coalition of other groups, of other racial groups, to work as a cohesive block. So they're more or less saying, right, you're either white or you're either not. And if you're not, you need to come together to get rid of these whites.
Right.
And I'm saying with the Hispanics, is there any way that some of them could maybe be pulled onto our side? Because what you tend to find, and just to round this point off, and there are historical examples of this, so take Haiti, for example, that at first there will be a coalition against the whites. But soon after, and in Haiti, the blacks and those of mixed race parentage turned on the whites and slaughtered them.
Mm.
But soon after that, those who were black turned on those who were mixed race and accused them of the same thing, accused them of, because they were mainly higher IQ, of running the country and murdered those of mixed race parentage too. And I wonder, is there any way
that,
you know, Hispanics could be, you know, reached out to in some way to work with us against this and to some way help act as a shield for whites?
I think there is, because, first of all, the illegal alien Hispanics are more, you know, Mayan or Aztec than, and less European than the ones here legally. So the deportation of illegal aliens would whiten to an extent the Hispanic population. Well, the other thing is, what's baffling about seeing these completely European leaders to Hispanic advocacy organizations is that in Latin American countries, race relations between Europeans and, mestizos or Indians are not good. And the Europeans don't identify with the Indians in the Latin American countries, but they come here, and the incentive structures these structures are created by the Jewish-dominated elite in this country. The incentive structures are be against white. Your place on the American totem pole is based on your claim to victimhood, and whites don't have a claim to victimhood because we have all the institutional power somehow. And the only way, if you're white, the only way you can claim victimhood is by being gay, which is part of the reason they push the gayness. I do remember what
people call it, the oppression Olympics, don't they?
Yes. And we'll probably have to talk about this a little after the break. But the I wanted to raise the Soviet model. Not that the Soviet Union as a state was a success, but in the later years, after Stalin, after World War II, Stalin rallied the country around Russian nationalism, but there was in the second half of the Soviet era, there was very definitely a Russian nationalism, and other groups were little brothers and accepted themselves as so. We'll be back right after the break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network.
Welcome back to the show. So just before the break, I was mentioning the Soviet Union. We normally wouldn't think of the Soviet Union as being much of a model for anything. But in terms of ethnic relations, which weren't really, I don't know if they weren't that bad or not, but it did break up along these republic lines with an ethnic thing. But it didn't break up with a whole lot of war. Just a little, pretty minor amount of war. When you consider countries that break up, usually there's a lot of bloodshed. The idea was that, you know, the Russians were the big brother. And then there were other nationalities, and they had their regions, and within their regions, they could use their language and education. They had their culture, and they could celebrate themselves, but that it was... The Soviet Union was a Russian-dominated country. And, you know, we've always had a or for well, in like 150 years, we've had a Chinese minority here, and they had Chinatowns, and some of them didn't live in Chinatown, but they never seemed to be offended at the idea of living in a country that had a white European Christian identity. They weren't offended by it, and they weren't repressed by it. And so maybe that there's kind of a model there where people who remain in the country can accept, okay, we're a minority, and that's okay to be a minority, rather than, I don't know. What do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, I've always said about the idea of the ethno-state that that is what we need. But being purist about it, and when I say purist, I mean being purist in the sense that it has to be absolutely 100% white and there can't be a single other person in it is not going to happen. That isn't going to happen. And we have to be pragmatic. We're too far down the road. Now, I would like to see an ethno state where we were 90% white, and obviously the minorities within that state were the high IQ, productive, people who wanted to fit in, who wanted to embrace our culture, who were, enthusiastic about being American or British, and we ensured that that number never reached above 1 in 10. And as long as we get that, white people will survive. But we are not. We are going well past that 1 in 10 now. And as we say, in places like America, we are reaching a tipping point in less than 30 years, where 5 out of 10 or more are going to be non-white. And once we reach that, there will be no turning back. So I think people have to be very pragmatic. They have to be willing to look beyond traditional, sort of, for want of a better word, demographic lines, and embrace working with people who will work with us for a better future, because there isn't a huge amount, but there is a significant amount of those who aren't of European descent who do want to work towards saving us as a people.
Well, I hear our people, Paul, but thank you for coming on and having a very interesting show, and everybody, make sure you check out Mark's latest video on the Mark Collett YouTube channel. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle